As the conflict in Syria continues to rage, more and more ordinary families are being caught up in the line of fire. Thousands of Syrians are fleeing each day to neighbouring countries like Jordan and Lebanon to escape the violence, often with only the clothes on their backs. But how are these refugees faring in their host countries? And what kind of war stories have they experienced? One person who has met these Syrian refugees and seen with her own eyes the extent of their plight is Carolyn Brennan, a senior communications officer at Catholic Relief Services. She spoke to Vatican Radio's Susie Hodges.
It's even getting worse for the refugees that are flooding across the border. And what was so particularly striking for me when I was meeting with them is how thoroughly blindsided these families were by what is happening. They never expected this. Many Syrians I met described having watched the Arab Spring just like we did, you know, from a distance, as viewers, never thinking it would touch their lives, never imagining it would reach where they live. And so they are very surprised by what is happening. They're shocked. Many described the humiliation of being in this position. They are a country that used to host refugees, Iraqis, Jordanians, Palestinians, and now they're in a position of having to ask for help. I wish the situation was still in the news as much as it was a month or a few months ago, but the situation is dire for so many people who never expected to be here. They never started this fight. They are families, they are women, they are children, and they're absolutely caught in the line of fire.
Do you have any idea, or does anybody have any idea, how many people are fleeing Syria each week, each month, and whether that exodus is increasing or not?
The exodus is definitely increasing. The official estimates of refugees, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, as of October 23rd, was 358,000 refugees. But that figure is very low. It represents the refugees who have fled into Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, and Iraq. But we have to keep in mind that so many families are afraid of registering formally for aid because they fear that if their name is officially put somewhere, it shows that they may have fled, either serving the government as a soldier. Many men have fled not wanting to do that, or it may show that they were in dissent of the government. So a lot of people are just not registering for aid, and they're trying to find assistance in the cities and communities. So that figure of 358,000 people, many in the aid and international community, are doubling that figure. And they estimate that there are about 3,000 people crossing the border in any of those countries on any given day.
Can you share with us some of the more heartrending stories that you heard when you met these Syrian refugees during your visit to Jordan and Lebanon?
You know, as a woman, I found that I was in a very fortunate position to be able to hear the stories of women. We often are seeing the images from this crisis of men fighting in the streets with guns, and you see the shooting and the buildings that have been toppled. But when you're there, you see only women and mostly children that they have in tow. And we don't see those images as much because traditionally in this part of the world, women are not comfortable being photographed, but they are everywhere, and they're pulling you to the side, and they're raising their sleeves of their long dresses, and they're showing you their bullet wounds, and they're begging you to not only hear their story, but to tell their story. So I met many women. One woman I met described the moment she knew she had to flee, and that was when she was going to the bakery with her mother, and they heard all this gunfire around them just outside the bakery, and she just turned to look where it was coming from, and she saw her mother lying on the street next to her, shot twice, and her son was with her, and he just was in shock, and she had to carry him and leave. And her husband, when they got home, was just said, basically, run, 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 go. And that is the situation that so many people fled during. It was in a moment's notice when people came into their house, stormed into their homes, and their husbands turned to them and said, run. And so many people don't have their papers. They don't have their money with them. I met another woman named Yazi in Lebanon, and she fled across the border with her two sons under five, and she was 8 months pregnant. Her husband had stayed behind to protect their home, to protect their land. And Yazi was very smart in trying to find aid. She did not want to register with any organization. She was afraid. She essentially knocked on the door of a modest-looking Lebanese home and said, If you give me shelter, I will work for you for nothing. I just need a place for my sons to sleep and for me to sleep. So when I met with her, with my colleagues from our local partner, Caritas Jordan, they were doctors and a social worker who were checking in on refugees like her who aren't registered anywhere, but they're in these cities and towns. And she had had her baby, which was in her lap. And my colleague, who was a nurse, asked her about her delivery. And Yazi said, well, I don't know if you understood me, but I'm not making a fee here, and I don't have a way of paying at the hospital. So I delivered here in this room, you know, by myself. And my colleague looked at her and said, but have you seen a doctor since? Has your child seen a pediatrician? And she said, no, I really don't know if you understand me. I don't have a way of doing that. So we immediately offered her and her two sons a ride, essentially, to our clinics. And we arrived at the clinic, and they received, you know, just wonderful health care from, you know, the doctors there. And there are hundreds of women at these clinics.
And what do you find are the greatest needs, the things that these people really need?
Medical care is such a significant need because so many people are coming across the border with injuries, with wounds from the fighting, or there are mothers who are pregnant and need care for delivery or for their children. So our agency and many agencies in the area are really having to staff up their gynecologists, their pediatricians, and their doctors. Basic food and relief items, again, these people have fled on a moment's notice with nothing. So they don't have means for shelter. They don't have means for feeding their children, for food. They don't have money to buy it. So we provide soap and ways to keep your water clean, diapers for the children. And then emotional counseling has been a big request among the refugees who show up at the doctor's offices, especially for the children who have witnessed some pretty horrific violence.
Such as? What kind of things, if you could you tell us, what kind of horrific things have they seen?
I met one father and son who were receiving counseling, and the father was describing that when they left, their wife was unable to make it across the border. They've been trying to find her. They left, again, at a moment's notice when they were shooting on their street. They're a middle-class family. This was never meant to happen in their neighborhood, and it literally blew up. And their son saw many people being shot on the street. But when I was with them, the counselor was describing how she gives crayons and paper to children to be able to talk about what they've seen. And right there, just before my own eyes, he was drawing this image of a woman on the street and a man holding a gun. It was a very simple sketch drawing with one crayon, but it was death on a piece of paper and something that's on his mind and that he's seen, and he's seven. And so many parents are asking for help of how to deal with what they've seen, not only just right now in terms of dealing with family separation and having witnessed these things that really no one should see, but how they're going to counsel and deal with these images and impact in the long term. They don't want it to affect their children in the long term.
You talk there about family separations. There was obviously an awful lot of people that where one spouse or the other had to flee. This too must be a source of deep distress, you know, wondering what's happened to the family member left behind in Syria.
The family separation, I would say, is the main source of stress, of grief, anxiety. It's what almost every person I met talked about because of the situation in which they were forced to flee. Men are largely staying behind to protect their land, to protect their houses. They've been inscripted. Many have gone missing. So you find mostly in these camps women, the elderly, and their children, and they don't know what's happening back home. And so there's a lot of anxiety that comes with the decisions they're making for protection, for basic survival, and not knowing where people are and what's happening to them.
And what kind of conditions are these refugees living in the camps?
The conditions for refugees vary. Many refugees are living in actual camps, like you might imagine a refugee camp. So they have the assistance of tents, water within the camp, food, basic relief supplies. Now that winter is coming, the needs for winterization are paramount. So lots of blankets, electric heaters, etc. But then there are those refugees who are too afraid to register. Many refugees are living essentially squatting in available homes or buildings along the border towns and areas. Some have family members, extended family members or friends who moved to these border towns many years ago, and so they're asking for help just to be able to sleep on their floors. I met many refugees who have crowded into one- or two-room houses of very distant relatives or acquaintances who had moved to these towns before and who had welcomed them, but it is certainly a burden on these families because resources are so stretched in the communities already, and there's no way for these refugees to earn an income.
And how crucial would you say is the role that's been played by Catholic Relief Services and your Caritas and your local Caritas partners?
We are helping tens of thousands of refugees in across these border areas. The assistance and needs are tremendous, being very stretched to the limit with more people coming in every day and with winter approaching. People are just very much in need of help. But many had a really nice life back home, and now they're in the situation in which they genuinely feel so embarrassed to be in a position to ask for help. They all talk about wanting to go home.